January the 26th, about 9:06 a.m. Mountain Time. Kobe Bryant with his lovely daughter and seven other people perished in a helicopter crash just outside of Los Angeles, California. Because of his fame and influence, on a great scale, the world took note. Unlike a number of professional sports, basketball is truly international. And so people from all over the world were shocked that a 41-year-old man, his beautiful daughter, those seven people who had their own lives and families could perish in just a few minutes. And when we hear things like that, generally we think to ourselves, well, I'll never get on a helicopter. As if that's going to stave off the inevitable. That's how we cope with it, don't we? Whether we're talking about a tsunami in 2004, which killed 300,000 people, or an earthquake in Haiti that killed about the same in 2010, we think to ourselves, well, I'm glad I don't live in a place where those kinds of environmental catastrophes take place, as if to imply that something similar can't happen. The king of terrors, death, stalks us all. It's appointed unto every man once to die, and after this, the judgment. But generally, it takes someone who's well known to pass, or someone that we know well to pass, for us, at least for a short period of time, to think about our own mortality. Kobe Bryant died, we thought about how death comes to us all, and even though we were saddened, we thought 41 years old, beautiful child, other people. And if we're keen observers, it causes us to remember that death shows no partiality. Whether you're rich or poor, whether you're young or old, whether you're strong or weak, whether you're black or white, death stalks us all. Despite that, though, we think it can't happen to us. And it takes, again, something of great magnitude to remind us. And what we don't realize is the kind of thing that happened in the life of Kobe Bryant happens all the time. I have this book, Walking with God Through Pain and Suffering. We went through this some time back. And the opening paragraph has always grabbed my attention. This book is profound in a lot of ways. It's about 325 pages, but this is what the author says. And see if you can't relate to what he's talking about. He says, suffering is everywhere, unavoidable, and its scope often overwhelms if you spend 1 hour, and its scope often overwhelms. Then he says, if you spend 1 hour reading this book, more than 5 children throughout the world will have died from abuse and violence during that time. If you give the entire day to reading, more than 100 children will have died violently. But this is, of course, only one of innumerable forms and modes of suffering. Thousands die from traffic accidents or cancer every hour, and hundreds of thousands learn that their loved ones are suddenly gone. That is comparable to the population of a small city being swept away every day, leaving families and friends devastated in the wake. When there's a tsunami that kills 300,000, we go, and we should, and we forget that hundreds of thousands die every day. And we forget sometimes how quickly, how suddenly that can happen. Turn to James chapter 4. As you're turning there, what do you got going on this afternoon? What's on your itinerary? What plans are you making? got lunch planned, got somewhere you're thinking about going. You already kind of got that in stone. What are you going to do tomorrow? What are you going to do Monday? You got something going on? You going to go to school Monday? What about for this summer? You got a vacation plan? Going somewhere special? Itineraries. Life is filled with itineraries. We make plans, don't we? We like to make plans. Making plans, that's good. It's good to have things to look forward to. In fact, one of the things that leads to hopelessness and depression is to feel like you have no plans, you have nothing to look forward to. But how do you make your plans? In other words, when you make your plans, do you consider ideas like uncertainty, brevity, frailty? In other words, we make plans at times and God laughs. Because we're human beings. And despite our scientific advancements, despite all that we've accomplished in this age of technology, if we're honest with ourselves, we still have to admit that we have no control over the future. We can have some control over our choices and what we might do, but we don't have any control over how the chips fall. Notice verse 13 of James chapter 4. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell and make a profit. Sounds like a good plan. James probably had rich merchants in mind. He's going to talk about rich folks to some degree in James chapter 5. Maybe rich Jewish Christians, because James writes to Jewish brethren. And there were some who were wealthy, who evidently were involved in commerce and who had businesses and who had plans that had to do with gaining more and more resources. And notice the specifics of the plan. You might say it doesn't sound too specific because he says such and such a city. He doesn't name the city. But notice the length of time that he references. Let us spend a year there. Isn't it interesting how often in life we like to map out our plans? And there's some value in that. Again, I don't want to leave the impression that it's not valuable to do that. But if you go to some workshop, they may have you sit down and say, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to map out a one-year plan. Where do you want to be a year from now? Then we're going to do a five-year plan, a 10-year plan, and then we're going to do one where we're going to look and see where you want to be by the time you reach the age of 65. We're going to map it all out. Fine, good. That's good. It's good to make plans. But the problem is oftentimes we make plans and we talk about time as if we had all the tomorrows we could ever want. As if they are inexhaustible. When you're 11, when you're 12, when you're 17, when you're 18, when you're 29, when you're 30, oh man, I got plenty of time. When you're 50, when you're 60, when you're 70, when you're 80, when you're 90, you start thinking to yourself, I don't feel like I have so much time. But here's the thing. When you were 11, you didn't know how much time you had. What did Solomon say? Do not boast about tomorrow. For you do not know what a day may bring forth. Proverbs 27 and verse 1. None of us have any idea if we'll make it to lunch today. You might think, maybe he's preaching a long time. No, I'm not going to preach us past lunchtime. That's not what I'm talking about. None of us have any guarantee we'll see Sunday evening or Monday morning or next week or next month or next year or the next decade. Let me ask you. Kobe Bryant climbed into that helicopter with those eight people. You think it crossed his mind even for a second? It could have. I know when I get on the plane, I always pray, Lord, it's out of my hands. Ask you bless this flight. But if we go down, I'm ready. And it's not going down, that's the problem. It's hitting. That's where the problem is. But I wonder if it crossed his mind that he wasn't going to make it to basketball practice. I wonder if when he said goodbye to his beautiful wife, if he thought, this is going to be the last time I'm going to see you. I wonder if she thought that. We don't think that way because we think we have all the tomorrows we might ever want. We've got next year and the year after and the one after that. Keep your place marked there, James 4, and look at Proverbs 16. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go into such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell and make a profit. Proverbs 16 and verse 9. I didn't plan that. But what does that tell us? Somebody called because something's going on that they didn't expect. I got to pay the fire department for that. You don't know how much money it cost me to get them to drive by at that appropriate time. Here's where we are. Proverbs 16:9. A man's heart plans his way. Isn't that true? Man, I got lots of plans. I got lots of dreams. I got lots of goals. I got lots of time. But the Lord directs the steps. What does that imply? Is it right to make plans? Sure it is. But who's ultimately in control of opening doors and closing doors? Allowing circumstances to arise or circumstances to go away? Only God is in control of that. But oftentimes we talk like and we live like we are in control and we know. Do not boast about tomorrow. Look at James 4. After this plan of spending a year and engaging in commerce, what does James say? He talks about ignorance. We're ignorant of what's going to happen tomorrow. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. You don't know. Here's the wonderful thing about being a child of God. God knows what's going to happen tomorrow. He's well aware. I don't know how many I didn't see that coming moments I've had in my life. A lot. I always use the illustration of the curveball when I'm expecting the high fastball, but I'll leave that one alone today. Lots of I didn't see that coming moments. I've got this idea, I've got this plan, I'm going in this direction, and suddenly there's a roadblock. Suddenly there's an explosion. Suddenly there's something else that takes me in another. I did not see it coming. Well, why didn't you see it coming, dummy? Because I don't possess the ability to know all things and to see the future. But God does. Look at Isaiah 46. Keep your place marked at James 4. Verses 9 and 10 of Isaiah 46, God describes himself for who he is, the only true God, the unique God. There's none other like him. Isaiah is one of your Old Testament prophets, one of the first major prophets. The first major prophets, not one of the first, but the. What is God able to do? Isaiah 46:10. Declare the end from the beginning and from ancient times things not yet done, saying, my counsel will stand, I will do my pleasure. He knows the end from the beginning. What hasn't happened, he knows. So I may be kept are caught off guard, but God never is. So I'm not trusting in my ingenuity. I'm not trusting in my ability to plan strategically. Although I hope that I have some ingenuity and I hope that I have some strategy, but ultimately I know that God is in control. And should I miss in my prognosticating, I know that He saw it coming. He says, I'll never leave you nor forsake you. I'm ignorant of what's going to happen tomorrow. But God isn't. And so He says, you hold on to my unchanging hands. You might not know the future. You might not know what it holds, but you know who holds the future. And it's me. Plans are good, but when you make your plans, always remember who is in control. Man's heart plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps, Proverbs 16 and verse 9. Think about the concept of brevity. In Psalm 90 and verse 10, the psalmist Moses said, Lord, teach us to number our days that we may possess a heart of wisdom. I always thought that was interesting, to number our days. Pay close attention. Don't take them for granted. Why? Because your days are numbered. Brevity. Life is brief. I was reading Genesis recently. Chapter 47, where Jacob or Israel stands before Pharaoh after coming in the reunion with Joseph and all of that. And he described his lifespan. And he lived 130 years. And this is what he said about it. He said, the days of my life have been few and evil. He lived to be 130 years old. But he described the totality of his days as few. And in the midst of those days, there was a lot of suffering and a lot of hardship. And that's true of any of us. Man who is born of woman is but of a few days and full of trouble. He comes forth like a flower and he fades away. Job 14, verses 1 and 2. What does James say? You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. What is your life? It's even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. We've all seen the vapor rising from the grass on a dewy morning, haven't we? Seeing that just kind of rising up. And before too long, only after an hour or so, what happens? It's gone. If you look at Psalm 144 and verse 4, talking about brevity and the brevity of life, the psalmist said, man is like a breath. His days are like a passing shadow. You ever thought about that? Your life being likened to a breath? How many times do you breathe during the day? In and out. In and out, in and out. And the psalmist says, your life is like one inhalation and one exhalation. It's done. The illustration, what is your life? It is even but a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. What should my attitude be? Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. I'm going to whip her when I get home. I mean, it's going to be ugly. I'll cry, she'll cry. It'll be great. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. I remember being about 9 or 10 years old. I can still see it on my grandparents' back porch. My grandfather was out there. He was probably, I don't know, he was in his 60s at the time, maybe a little older. It's hard to remember. And he said, if I live another 10 years, I'm going to do, and he named something. first time in my life I'd heard somebody talk like that. I said, what are you talking about if you live 10 years? Are you kidding me? Surely you're going to live 10 years. He didn't. Life is brief, brevity. Life is not guaranteed, uncertainty. If the Lord wills, we shall live. One day the curtain will come down for all of us. Won't it? All of us. So I want to live in such a way that the Lord's will is always front and center in everything that I do. And the height of arrogance is to act like you're in control when you're not. He says, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. How many people live like God's not even involved in anything? He's the God of the backside of the universe. If he exists at all, yeah, he created everything. If there was one, but he's not involved in people's lives. He doesn't have a plan. That's not what the Bible teaches. He's well aware of the future. He's aware of each of us intimately. He wants us to make plans, grand plans, as it pertains to his will, and to invite him into everything that we do. But we have to realize that our heart may plan, but he directs the steps. What if I live like I'm in control? What does verse 17 say? To him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin. That's the context of that statement. Usually we apply that to everything under the sun, right? Anything I know I ought to do but don't do it, it's sin. Okay, maybe so. But this is the context. The context is, if you walk around acting like you have all the tomorrows you want, if you walk around acting like you're really controlling your circumstances, then you sin against God because you boast with such an attitude, because you are in charge of your days. Life. You know what has happened within the framework of this 22-minute sermon and a half? Somebody died. Probably somebody's. Somebody's weeping. Somebody was born. Somebody's laughing. Somebody is so happy they can barely stand it. Somebody's all alone somewhere. Somebody's in the midst of a group. But we're all headed in one direction. That's ultimately to stand before the God of heaven. And God says you need to live life understanding that I'm in control of it. I'm in control of your time, so you better allow me to be in control of your life, or you're going to miss out on what matters most. Timelessness. Eternity. If you should perish, God forbid, right now, would you open up your eyes in torment, or would you find yourself in a place of comfort and rest, Abraham's bosom? Think Kobe thought he was going to pass away when he left? If the Lord should return with a shout, with the voice of an archangel, right now, would you, by his grace, be able to hear, enter in good and faithful service? That's where we're headed. Some of us are going to reach the end of the line a lot faster than others. But all of us will reach the end of the line. Are you a Christian? Are you following Jesus? Have you been baptized into Christ? If not, let us help you as we stand and sing.
Is it for me, dear Savior, thy glory and thy rest? For me so weak and sinful, oh, shall